是假的。
我
看着挺
好。是啊。
Madam Chairwoman, I move the minutes of the previous meeting.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Under the bill under consideration, we will file 1582. We have a report on the bill.
Oops, sorry. From the Division of Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the subcommittee division report on House File 2582. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? I always like that little lag you guys do. Okay. Yeah, report is adopted. I move that House File 2582 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations. We now have the bill before us. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We're going to be considerate of your time and go as quickly as we can. I have Diane Cinnamon with me from Forest Lake, who's been involved in this for many, many years. She's here to answer questions if you have questions, and we're going to hold her testimony for the next committee. Members, making March 29th Vietnam Veterans Day has meaning for a lot of people, and a great deal of meaning for Diane, a great deal of meaning for me. I grew up in that era. But I think it's also a part of what the Minnesota Twins did. Back in the summer of 1967, Minnesota Twins had 150 civilians on the infield grass, beautiful summer day, and they swore to uphold the Constitution and join the Marines. They went off to Vietnam. Well, actually, in the fourth inning of that game, they were put on a bus and taken to Wold Chamberlain Airfield and flown to San Diego. This book covers many members of the Twins platoon during boot camp, during Vietnam, and when they came home. And of those 150, not all of them came home. And of the service members on the wall, on the Vietnam Wall, 1,072 were Minnesota residents at the time that they entered service. Seven states, actually 22 states are working on this, and 27 states have actually ratified this. Tennessee, Mississippi, New York, Georgia, and New Mexico, I believe, are those states. There has been discussion about the date, March 29th. It keeps coming up, so just to refresh everyone's memory, March 29th is the day that you remember in the news clips you've seen with the helicopters on the roof of buildings removing the last 2,500 troops from Vietnam, and it's the final day of U.S. involvement in the war in Vietnam. Now, two members of an armed services, I don't know if they were Marines or Army or Air Force, died after that date, but the date that the U.S. involvement stopped was March 29th. It's the date all the other states have chosen, and they've stuck with it. So to keep it the same across the country, we'd like to keep it at March 29th. Also, in Tennessee, on March 29th of this year, they're going to have a big celebration, and they're hoping more and more states will ratify this as we go along. I know that the Bush administration has been asked to make it a presidential proclamation, but as you know, that usually doesn't happen until the very end of the term when they do the pardons and the proclamations. So I'm hoping that Minnesota will do something that the Minnesota Twins started by adopting this platoon, and that the state of Minnesota we'll finish the job by welcoming home those veterans, and stand for questions, and I'd appreciate your support.
Are there any questions or comments? If not, I renew my motion that House File 2582 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Can I ask a question? Where can you buy your book?
You can have this one if you want, Madam Chair, and I'll get another one.
Enough for everyone?
Thank you very much. As most of you know, my husband was a Vietnam veteran, so this will be fun to read.
And Madam Chair, the author of that book will be in the gallery whatever day we have set off the house floor with Diana, members of her family, and a lot of other families. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Representative Spoonen, is she here? Welcome, Representative Coonan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill under consideration is House File 2664. We have a report on this bill from the Division of Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the division report on House File 2664. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The report is adopted. I move that House File 2664 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. We now have the bill before us. Representative Coonan, could you explain the bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The bill is pretty straightforward. It authorizes a veteran's home in Montevideo and requires that the state share for the building itself would be raised locally. We've got commitment now from the city and county to do just that. I should tell the committee this is a very new project. Our first meeting was January 8th, so this is a very new project and we're just in the beginning stages. However, at that meeting there were in attendance people from communities in the surrounding counties. There was probably over 80 people at that meeting. The folks there in Montevideo are completely dedicated to moving forward with this, and they believe that the reason that Montevideo would be a good place for a veteran's home is that, first of all, there's a community-based outpatient VA clinic there. It's a branch of the St. Cloud Clinic. That clinic was paid for locally. Also, under construction at the present time are a new medical clinic and new hospital there in Montevideo. In fact, the new medical clinic was just opened last month, and we expect in another year or so the new hospital will be ready to go. Those two buildings also were paid for locally, so you can see there's a lot of commitment locally for the project. Last week, the group from Montevideo did meet with the department to figure out what the next steps are in this process, and they plan to go ahead and move along. It looks like now the next step is actually a preliminary study and a plan on just which what veterans groups they when I say groups, I mean I'm talking about veterans' needs they plan to address in this veterans' home. Also, they'd be looking at the type of building they would build and what it would look like. Nowadays, the pod structure is fairly popular, and I'm sure that's probably the route they would go. That would give flexibility in each area and for the different services that could be provided. I think it's pretty clear that there is a need for additional beds in Minnesota. The legislative auditor's report, which came out last month, shows that there's 137,000 vets from 65 to 84, and there are 19,000 vets 85 and over. And to give a little better, clearer picture on what we're looking at, there's 45,000 World War II vets in the state at this time, 49,000 Korean vets, and 141,000 Vietnam vets. So when you look out to the future, you can see just how much need there will be. And at the present time, there are waiting lists at all of the veterans' homes. I guess with that, Madam Chair, if the committee members have questions.
Are there any questions, Representative Jones?
Madam Chair, this is going to finance, right?
Yes.
Okay. And members, Representative Finstead and I want to see this down in finance for a number of reasons, and Representative Cohen's aware of it. Most importantly, regardless of who builds it, the state, if it's a domiciliary or long-term care facility, funds it. So we have to start looking at what that will cost in the future. But more importantly than that, we have to start getting an understanding. Just like all nursing homes, veterans' nursing home beds are a finite number in the state right now. And when you look at what we have today and what's planned on the books for Fergus Falls and Wilmer, we're butting up against that. And so there may have to be additional homework done out with the federal contingency if we're going to expand those number of beds. And then again, we as a policy will have to decide if we want to fund additional beds on top of the cap into the future. Not that I'm saying we won't and that there's a way to do it, but I think Representative Cohen also talked about understanding what the real need is out there, not only for this type of facility. Maybe there's something we're not even looking at yet that could fill a need out in Montevideo. And as we start planning over the next year preview of our budget year coming next session, I think we want to start understanding how groups like this, good enthusiastic groups, can fit what the statewide plan is for delivery of veteran services and health care. So I know Representative Finstead and I, as the lead and the chair of the committee, want to see all these over there and make sure that they're part of that planning process and that everyone's aware of all the things we need to be aware of.
Yeah, Madam Chair?
Representative Cohen.
Yes, and thank you. And Representative Junkie gave a very accurate overview of what we're looking at here. And we also heard some of those same things with the meeting with the department here last week. So, yes, that's right. We did have a fiscal note prepared. It's pretty optimistic. It shows that things getting moving along, getting into place fairly soon. But it looks to me, and I haven't studied the details yet, but it looks to me like it's based off the operations of Fergus Falls and Laverne. It'd be somewhat similar in size. And so that's where we're at on that.
Are there any other questions, or Representative Finstead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Junkie, I pretty much said what was on my mind, but as I look at the fiscal note and some of the other considerations, I first want to applaud your community for taking the initiative to move and move quickly on this. As Representative Junkie said, when you have a committed community that's talking about pledging funds themselves, I think it behooves us to take a look at how we can leverage both state and federal dollars. I will say that, I mean, I think from what I've understood from hearing you here and doing a little research on this, that I appreciate the fiscal note, but I don't think it's probably anywhere close to what the accurate picture will look like based on what's going to be there, what's going to fit, are we going to be able to apply for state and federal funds, or are we going to allocate state funds? So I think it's a good starting point, and I just hope that you're committed to working with us, and I know you are, so thank you.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Cooney.
And Representative Finstead, you're exactly right. It's just a starting point. Like I said, it was based off of two homes already in operation. There's no way in this early point yet that we know if they're even going to look similar when the final plan gets into place, so thank you.
Are there any other questions or discussions? If not, hearing none, I'll renew my motion that HF2664 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Representative Bingham has a conflict, so would you like to go? Is that okay with the people in the
You gotta ask Demmer, he's sitting here.
Is that okay, Representative Demmer? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Demmer.
The bill under consideration is House File 3161. We have a report on this bill from the Division of Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption to the division report on House File 3161. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? Say nay. The motion prevails and the report is adopted. I move that House File 3161 be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register. We now have the bill before us. Representative Bingham, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3161 started after having a conversation with my constituent who testified in the Veterans Affairs Committee, but unfortunately was not able to make it today, about her brother who was killed in the line of duty and as a military, active military member. He had been a resident of Minnesota and for some reason was not being able to be recognized on Minnesota because he enlisted in Wisconsin but had been a resident here. And the constituent, after calling through many of places, departments, various government departments, found out that the Associated Press is the only organization that keeps a list, an active list of deceased military members. So what this bill does is ask the Department of Veterans Affairs to do that. And with some very good discussion in the Veteran Affairs Committee, we amended it so that basically we're going to start from today and go back. And the Department of Veterans Affairs should answer any questions, but they have already started doing this previously before the legislation, but also have assistance with being able to get some of these names to the History Museum. And there is no fiscal note, or impact, therefore there's no fiscal note, but there's no fiscal impact for the bill. And I would appreciate your support on the matter, and I can stand for questions.
Are there any questions? Comments? Representative Stunke.
Well, I'd love to hear from the author. I'd rather hear from the department that there's no fiscal note on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Dempsey, we do have a staff member currently who started to compile, not as comprehensive as the list as Representative Bingham is asking for, but we do have her starting a list, so we will just add this to her duty.
So there, Madam Chair, say it in the tape, there's no fiscal impact for the department.
Madam Chair, Representative Dempsey, there is no fiscal impact to the department.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Christine, would you like to say your name?
Christine Field, Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Hi. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, just one more thing. I'll expand. I forgot this part. What the list will do is it will gather the name, obviously, rank, and this list will be held by the Department of Veterans Affairs for ceremonial purposes, and it would not be able to be used to determine eligibility of a benefit. So it's for ceremonial purposes.
Any other questions or discussion? Representative Szymanski.
Madam Chair, Ms. Bingham, Representative Bingham, excuse me. Question I have is on line 1.8 of the bill, it says of service-connected causes while serving. Will this... So they have to be basically on active duty and died while on active duty? Or the question I'm asking is veterans who may have died of Agent Orange poisoning or something of that circumstance, would they be on this list as well if they were, you know, retired or exited the military prior to dying?
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, as the bill is written now, no.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Discussion? If not, I renew my motion that F3161 be recommended to pass and referred to the general register. All those in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Bill passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. Again, thank you, Representative Jemmer.
Representative Jemmer. Welcome, Representative Jemmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill under consider is House File 2276. We have a report on this bill from the Division of Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the division report on House File 2276. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. The report is adopted. I move that House File 2276 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee of Government or Operations. We now have the bill before us. Representative Jemmer, would you please explain your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here. I like your prop, Madam Chair. It makes me feel right at home with the, would that be Elsie?
Well, you should see her dance.
Well, maybe another time. Keep things moving along. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing the bill. I appreciate it. This is pretty simple. There is no fiscal note to Representative Junkie. No cost to this. It's a feel-good thing. This is an organization called the Silver Star Families of America. And it started back in April of 2005 by a gentleman who simply wanted a way to recognize wounded soldiers, or actually wounded people, not just soldiers, but wounded people in conflicts and wars. And back in 2005, this fellow started this organization, and since that time, 44 states have either done resolutions and or passed bills designating May 1st as Silver Star Family of America Day. You should have a handout that kind of explains what it's about, and that's what this does. It declares Silver Star Families of America Day on May 1st. The whole idea, again, is to recognize people who have been hurt in combat. And Madam Chair, I guess I'll stand for questions with that. We can talk about the whole thing, what they try to do.
Are there any questions? Discussions? If not,
Madam Chair, one thing I probably should have mentioned, actually here in Minnesota, we're one of the 44 states. You should have in your packet a copy of the resolution the governor signed actually last year for designating May 1st. Probably doesn't make much difference one way or the other, but I thought it was significant that this has been around. So I think it's a good thing to do, and it honors our veterans, and I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Representative Jemmer. Hearing no discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 2276 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Government Operations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The bill has passed.
Thank you.
Representative Easton, would you like to? Welcome, Representative Eastman. The bill under consideration is House File 2095. We have a report on this bill from the Division on Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the division report on House File 2095. Is there any further discussion or motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. The motion prevails and the report is adopted. I move that House File 2095 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Public Safety. We now have the bill before us. Representative Eastland, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. There's one technical item on the engrossment that we're looking at here that I'd like to ask the committee to amend, and it's just simply on line 1.12. If you look at the language there, between after the word received, there should be an "an" in there, "an." So the new language would read "received an honorable or general discharge."
I'll move Representative Eastland's amendment. And would you like to state it for us, Mr. Cleary?
Madam Chair, this document, I don't have the full language. Could we ask Representative Eastland to read it? Madam Chair, on line 111, it would read, I'll read the whole sentence.
Okay.
It would read, B, a person who has relevant military experience and who is currently serving in or has, and moving to line 112, or has received an honorable or general discharge from the military is eligible to take the reciprocity exam.
All those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Nay. The amendment passes. Would you like to continue?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you. This bill is simply extending a benefit that currently exists for people who have served in the military, particularly in the in military police service. Current law allows someone who has 5 years of experience in military police to, after they have been discharged, be exempted from the requirements for taking the post exam and then apply to take the post exam. What this bill does is it simply says that an officer who is currently serving and has that experience is eligible to take the post board exam. If you would like to go into the military or into law enforcement and civilian life, it simply shortens the gap between when they are discharged and when they could actually begin work in the police field.
Are there any questions of Representative Eastland? Any discussion? If not, I renew my motion that House File 2095 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Public Safety. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Bill passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ward. Welcome, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The bill under consideration is House File 2524. We have a report on this bill from the Division on Veterans Affairs. Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, knowing that Representative Ward would only bring us good things, I move adoption of the division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the division report on House File 2524. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the report is adopted. I move that House File 2524 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. We now have the bill before us. Representative Ward, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill broadens the definition of the term resident student to include the spouse and children of a resident veteran for purpose of determining eligibility for state financial aid for higher education. Came from a constituent of mine, and I'd just like to read the letter that he sent to me. Dear Representative Ward, my name is Jesse Ray. I was honorably discharged from the Navy a year ago. I grew up in Brainerd. During my time in service, I met my wife, and we moved back here after I got out. She was from Connecticut. Due to state statute, she was not eligible for a state-funded grant for financial aid. According to this, she would have to put attending classes on hold for a year. I feel that returning service members' family should be considered a resident student upon moving back to the state if the spouse has maintained residency during that time of service. And just a few other points of what this bill would do, Madam Chair, members. This bill really is in support of our Governor Polanyi's push to encourage military members and their families to return to the state after service. Members stationed in the state are given resident status to attend public institutions. Veterans who served in the military, it's oftentimes the family members who have stayed back and suffered and kept the family together so that the military member has a place to come home to. The spouse's education oftentimes will benefit the family with better paying jobs and supporting the economy of the state and the communities they live in. And finally, we only have reciprocity with our bordering states. There are very few military installations in those states. This will level the playing field for our veterans. So having said that, Madam Chair, I would ask for your support on House File 2524, and I will stand for any questions.
Representative Jumke?
Well, Madam Chair, and to counsel, maybe, if he's paying attention, most bills either have stuff crossed out or underlined to show the new language. There's neither on this one. What's the deal? Is this all new language and just didn't get underlined, or is there a section here that's new, or?
Madam Chair and Representative Jumke, I would say that the wrong page got attached to this.
Okay, so it is the wrong, no one has the right bill here.
I have a copy off the web, but I can read it for the committee if that would be okay.
Is it on this page, or is it just totally, we got the wrong page here?
No, the language you see potentially is the bill before, is the statute before the bill was drafted. I don't know where that came from.
Right, okay.
It should read on the back side, with this blank, but it should read 6. A spouse or dependent of a veteran, as defined in section 197.447, if the veteran is a Minnesota resident. That's the new language that would be added. You'll notice in clause number 5, a member of the armed forces, actually a member or spouse or dependent of a member of the armed forces of the United States stationed in Minnesota on active federal duty, already is a resident student. That's a member on federal active duty stationed in Minnesota. This would be adding any veteran and the spouse and dependent family members of a veteran. That would be the new language. Does that answer your question?
So, Madam Chair, so we're basically broadening it. Right now we have armed forces. Does that include active National Guard? Is that under armed forces, or is that under the new language, or neither?
Representative Jumke, on clause number 5, under current law, an active member of the National Guard who's on federal active service or even state active service would be included already in current law.
And Madam Chair, to the follow-up, then what if you're just regular guard doing your drills once a month, 2 weeks in the summer? Do your spouse and wife qualify?
Madam Chair and Representative Jumke, the new language would pick up a veteran and a member of the National Guard, including some, I talked to one this week, a 37-and-a-half-year member of the National Guard who was never a veteran because he was never called into federal active duty, never served a day of federal active duty. Neither did, I understand, General Andriotti, who was the Adjutant General of the National Guard for many years. Now most Guard members are being called into active duty, and they do become a veteran. after they serve a six-month period of time, or once they go off to the war. They are becoming veterans now, but under current law, a member of the National Guard who was serving in federal active duty, who did get called off to the war, for example, would already be covered, and so would his family members. This picks up other veterans.
Madam Chair, just trying to get this straight, is National Guard active duty count if it's active duty within the state? You don't have to be active duty somewhere beyond Minnesota. Many Guard members are activated and serve at Fort Snelling or right here at the Armory.
Such as following 9/11, a lot of Minnesotans were called up to serve 179 days at the airport. Had they been called up to serve by the President 180 days in state active service, they would be considered veterans. They were not, they didn't earn veteran status because they were called up for one day short of that. So I guess the answer to your question is, a person who is called in, a Guard member who is called into state active service would have to serve continuously for actually 181 days to become a veteran.
Representative Ward?
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie. Also, Section 5, and I have the correct bill in my hand here with the added number 6 language. The number 5, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but the number 5, it talks about the veteran that is stationed in Minnesota. Veteran is stationed in Minnesota.
Actually, a military member, sir, who's stationed in Minnesota.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my bill, House File 2524, is for a veteran that is stationed, Minnesota resident, that is stationed outside of Minnesota, marries, comes home. He or she is eligible for resident student status right off the bat, but the spouse and the dependent are not. And that's what the purpose of the bill is, to allow the spouse and the child to be defined as a resident student, just in terms, for eligibility terms, for a higher ed applications, grant applications and things.
Representative Jaskowski.
Madam Chair, members, and Representative Ward, how long do those that are stationed outside of Minnesota, how long are they residents of the state? Is there a definition for that?
Representative Ward?
Madam Chair, Representative, there's nothing in the bill that defines length of stay as a Minnesota resident.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ward, this benefit would occur anyway after 12 months, is that correct? There's nothing new granted to them, it's just really removing that 12-month waiting period. Do I understand that correctly?
Representative Ward?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowie, that is correct. After 12 months, they would be eligible for that criteria that would allow them to apply for higher ed financial assistance. This is just allowing it immediately because otherwise they have to be on hold, per se, for a year.
So we're not really granting them anything new. We're just trying to make the transition easier and quicker here. Is that the intent?
Madam Chair, Representative Bowie, that is the intent.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Drozdowski, a person who goes into the military retains his residency in his home state for as long as he wants. Could be lifetime. And of course, then he has the privilege of paying tax back to the state of Minnesota as well.
Which is now higher than it was.
Are there any other questions or discussions? If not, hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 2524 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill passes. Thank you, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Paul. The bill under consideration is House File 2645. We have a report on this bill from the Division on Veterans Affairs, Representative Doty.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the Division report.
Representative Doty moves adoption of the Division report on House File 2645. Is there any further discussion of that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the report is adopted. I move that House File 2645 pass without recommendation to the Committee on Finance. We now have the bill before us. Representative Faust, explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a relatively simple bill about a relatively not simple program. What we're asking the National Guard to do is to do an in-house study to determine how much it would cost to start a National Guard Youth Challenge program in the state of Minnesota. In the conversations that I've had with Colonel Allness, we identified several locations that would be possible sites that would work for this program in Minnesota, but all of them have advantages and disadvantages, and we're just asking them to figure out how much it would actually cost to start the program. As far as the National Guard Youth Challenge Program, I'll let Colonel Allness talk about that, and then I'll just have a few follow-up comments on the end of that. And I think that it's important to at least get a brief overview of what the challenge program is so that you know what we're talking about when we ask for them to do a study on it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Colonel Allness.
Colonel Allness?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs, and we appreciate the legislature's approach on this potential program rather than just going through and enacting it, because it is a relatively substantial program. The Challenge Program has been implemented in 27 states throughout the country and has been quite successful in some of those states. The program provides the federal funding, 60-40 split for the program, which is significant but requires a significant state component. So if we look at the total cost of the program when fully implemented is about $4 million a year. The state commitment to that would be about $1.5 million. A little bit of background, the Challenge Program is a residential military academy program of 5.5 months, the length and duration, and they conduct 2 sessions throughout the year. So you can see they have a class going for about 6 months and then a break and then another class for 6 months. The first 2 weeks is a boot camp experience where they really go through and try to figure out if the young men and women are interested in making the commitment to go through. There's about a 50% attrition. So the program is a 100-bed program. They bring in 200 kids for the first 2 weeks, and about 100 of them leave, and then they have 100 people there who stick through the remaining 5 months of the program, and that's about a 5% attrition thereafter. So the first 2 weeks is really a shakeout period, and thereafter, like I said, more of a military academy than a boot camp type experience. And they focus on giving the young men and women the skills to transition and to leave their old environment and get into an environment that helps them be successful and gives them the discipline to succeed. Currently, Minnesota conducts a challenge program through the Department of Corrections. They have an adult challenge program, and they're also looking at a youth challenge program, but that has not been fully filled to where they're at. So anything that we do on this would work with Department of Corrections to make sure that any program that we consider would fall in line with them, at least as a partner, maybe as a lead partner for the program, to make sure that we don't double up with what capabilities are out there. And finally, the Minnesota National Guard did conduct a program a number of years ago, a job shadow program at Camp Ripley for troubled youth, but that was suspended due to lack of participants. As part of the report, we'll conduct analysis of that program, determine why youth were not referred to the program, and try to figure out if we can get sufficient numbers to continue the program. Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony.
Are there any questions? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Allness, you said that about 50% of the participants wash out in the first 2 weeks of boot camp. What's the reason for that? Are they just not that interested in continuing the program, or is it physically too challenging for them?
Colonel?
Madam Chair, Representative,
It's based on averages, but what they do is they want to find out if the individuals are truly serious about making a life change. Do they want to change from the home environment, maybe the neighborhood they came from, and make a change in their life? And they find that in order for those people to make the commitment, and it is physically taxing during that time period, but it's not anything that is onerous or anything that is abusive in nature. It's just a matter of finding out, are they serious about pursuing the program? And I think that shows then, you know, they get the right temple, and there's a lot of training into it, and we work very closely to make sure that the people who are giving the boot camp type experience are there to use as a motivator rather than a discriminator. And then that helps make sure that the people who enroll in the program have a high chance of succeeding in the long run.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Wellness, now when these youth are inducted into this camp, are they sent there, you know, through the court system, or are they volunteering to participate in this National Guard Youth Program?
Colonel Wellness.
Madam Chair, Representative. Most people are self-referred or encouraged, or some are even encouraged by the judicial system, but it's not meant to be stayed on another type of court system. Self-referral is a lot of it.
If I could add to that, I would like to, is that generally it's a voluntary program. And I don't know the regulations, and maybe Colonel Almas does, whether or not we could incorporate it into a court mandate where a judge send somebody to this facility or not. I'm not sure if that's a possibility or not.
And Madam Chair, if I may just say on that, that's why we say we'd work very closely with Department of Corrections, as if they already have an existing type of program, how would they nest together? How would we work either self-referral or maybe some court-ordered people to report to that to make sure that it's consistent and that we get the best possible ways? We're not going to do something that's inconsistent or make multiple redundant programs.
Madam Chair, if I may just ask one last question, and referring to the Department of Corrections, and you know, if we run the National Guard Youth Program, it would be 60% funded by the federal government. Currently, with the Department of Corrections, is there any federal money coming into that program right now? Or is it all state funded? And if we were to incorporate this National Guard Youth Program, would the state, in essence, be saving some money?
Representative Fowler?
I have been told that there is no federal money coming into the corrections part of the judicial side of this, so this would be new money coming into it. That's my understanding of it. That's what I'm into.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, if I may add to this, probably appropriate point to add in a comment from the Adjutant General that he said is that as we look at programs for youth, he was a previous president of Alexander Technical College, and they wanted to start a Big Brother Big Sister program there, but he did not encourage it because he didn't want to set up the youth where they get a relationship with a person for a year or two and then they leave. When you're looking for those type of programs, you need a long-term approach, someone who's willing to commit 6-8 years for the program. One of the challenges we have on a program like this is that if the state makes a commitment, we want to make sure we're making a commitment for the long run. This is a value-added program for the Department of Military Affairs. So if we look at the funding for it, we'd look at it coming, we would hope, from education or from corrections, something that would be sustainable over time. Otherwise, if we get into a fiscal year like this and you ask our agency to take a 3 or 5% reduction, we look at what's our core mission, then we look at what's value-added. This is value-added from us, and then this kind of program would see what we'd recommend be cut. So we really encourage the legislature, and the report will say that as well, to look at what are the funding streams and what's the appropriate place to make it the lead state agency to ensure if we go forward with this, it's something we can sustain in the long run. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions, comments, discussions?
I've got one last comment, Eric, if I could. Thank you, Madam Chair. This program is designed for youth 16 to 18 years old. The majority of them have already dropped out of school and even dropped out of alternative programs that they have in school. So we're taking the people that generally, as a rule, are not going to be very productive members of society. And there's a high dropout rate, but the people that finish this program, 76% of them have their GED or their high school diploma by the time they're done. And it really does give them a second chance to get back on the right path to become productive members of society. And if you look at that, how many of those 100 or 200 people per year that would graduate from this would we have to keep out of prison to pay for the whole program? How many of them would have to actually, you know, get a good paying job to pay for the program? The numbers are relatively low on both of those things. And so there's one case where somebody had dropped out of school, went into this program, and is now a brain surgeon. So, I mean, think of the return on investment that we're getting from that individual. And so it's something that I think is worth investigating, and that's really all we're asking to do is to do an investigation on into what this program costs and will cost in the future. So thank you.
Anyone else? If not, hearing none, I renew my motion that House File 2645 pass without recommendation to the Committee of Finance. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The bill passes. So we are adjourned.